Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. To all my fellow pastors, I've got a question for you. Does your city know that your church exists? Listen, I get it. You're preaching, you're leading, you're discipling, you're doing ministry. We are in the same boat. And let's be honest, social media and marketing, not your strong suit, not mine either. And that's probably the last thing on your mind. And that's why we chose to partner with Church Candy Marketing for our church plant, The Garden. We out here, y'all. They help churches get more actual guests walking through the doors on Sunday without you or I having to stress over ads or algorithms or trying to crack the social media code. Right now, Church Candy is helping nearly 400 churches reach their communities with simple invite ads, and it works. It's super effective. I can tell you from firsthand experience. So if you're tired of being your city's best kept secret, how about you do this? Go to churchcandy.com/Manny and book a free consultation, book a discovery call. Their team will break it all down and show you how to start seeing new faces at your church this Sunday. I'm in the trenches with you, trying to grow the church. And how about we just start a whole campaign? No more empty churches. So let's partner with Church Candy and get our churches full for the glory of Jesus. Let's go. Family, welcome to Romans. Come on, we're in a brand new book of the Bible. I say this every day. Okay, if you have not done today's reading, which is chapters 1 and 2 of the book of Romans, just go ahead, pause this video, pause this audio, go do the reading so that what we're talking about actually makes sense. We're going to dive right in to some context clues. I want to give you context really for the entire book of Romans, but this is really going to help us in Romans chapters 1 and 2. Okay, so here we go. Here's some context clues. In AD 51, there's a massive event that happens in AD 51 that is actually going to be the catalyst for the book of Romans, okay? In AD 51, Emperor Claudius expels all Jews from Rome. Now, we know from Acts chapter 2 that there were visitors from Rome there on the day of Pentecost. So the church in Rome, and they go back to Rome, and they start churches. Well, who was there at Acts chapter 2? These are Jewish believers. Okay, these are Jewish believers in the Messiah. And so the church in Rome has a very, very Jewish foundation. So all the way from Acts chapter 2, we know that there are visitors from Rome. They bring the gospel back to Rome, and these Jewish believers carry the gospel back to Rome, and they start churches. They start house churches. Well, in AD 51, so the church in Rome has been kicking and going for a couple of decades, maybe two decades, and now Emperor Claudius has expelled all Jews from Rome, leaving Gentile believers behind. The Jews are probably expelled from Rome anywhere from 4 to 6 years, maybe even 7 years. Okay, at the very beginning of Emperor Nero's reign, he allows Jews to come back into Rome. And you can imagine that this is kind of awkward, okay? Like, the old worship leader from 5 years ago is back. The old deacon from 4 years ago is back. That there's all these Jews that made up the foundation of this church in Rome have been gone. And these are the people who understand the Torah. These are the people who understand God's law. These are the people who would even understand a book like Romans. They understand the Hebrew scriptures. These are the people who are the leaders of the church in Rome. And for 4, 5, 6, 7 years, they're gone. Okay? They've been expelled from Rome. And so Gentiles have been left to their own devices. And they've been left to grow the church and grow their faith without Jewish influence. That means without anyone telling them about dietary restrictions or circumcision or Sabbath or keeping certain days holy. And so now Jews have come back, and they're coming back to a church that they don't really recognize. There are Gentile believers who are now leaders. They're Gentile believers who have now changed the fabric of what this church was like. And as you can imagine, that just creates an awkward tension. Not only does it create tension, but it's going to create the foundation of the division that really sparks Paul wanting to write a letter to this group. We know from Acts chapter 18 that Priscilla and Aquila are part of these Jews that have been expelled from Rome, okay? And so Paul knows the Roman Christians. He's not unfamiliar with this church or this group of churches, but this is not a church that he directly plants, okay? So his tone is going to be a lot different than books like 1 Corinthians, where he is the apostle. He is the person that planted the church. His tone is going to be different. And so Paul, this is not, okay, here we go. This is my first, like, I'm going to kind of say something a little provocative or controversial. This is not a theological essay. Now, there's a lot of theology in the book of Romans, but this is not, first and foremost, an essay or treatise on theology. There's a ton of theology. And for a lot of us, really, the thing that makes reading Romans difficult is you're reading, or me, I, you, we, are reading Romans through the lens of John Calvin, or reading Romans through the lens of Martin Luther, or reading Romans through the lens of the Reformation. And I, in the next couple of days, really want to ground us not in the theological frameworks that we could overlay on the book of Romans, but really want to get into the content and the context of the Greco-Roman world and what Paul is actually addressing from chapters 1 through 16. So, with all that in mind, okay, we want to look at chapters 1 and 2 and go, all right, what is Paul talking about? Okay, when we get to chapter 1, Paul's really going to address three groups. The first group that Paul's going to address is what we would call the Gentile pagan. Paul's got a lot of things to say to the Gentile pagan. Then, second group that Paul's going to address, what we would call the Gentile moralist. These would actually be Gentile believers. And then the third group that Paul's going to address are Jewish believers, Jewish Christians. Okay, here's what Paul has to say to the Gentile pagan in Romans chapter 1, verses 18 all the way to verses 32. Paul is going to outline that the pagan Gentiles are guilty before God, and he's going to outline how a godless and secular mindset leads to destruction and depravity. Really, kind of the linchpin of this argument can be found in verses like verse 26. It's going to say something like this. Because of this, God gave them over to shameful lust. Even their women exchange natural relations for unnatural ones. Paul's dropping a bomb here. He's actually saying that the Greco-Roman world is so depraved and is so antithetical and so guilty before God that the pinnacle of that is actually found in homosexual practice or homosexual behavior, okay? Not homosexual feelings, not homosexual temptation, but homosexual behavior. Now, Romans chapter 1, verse 26, here's our nerdy nugget for the day. Romans chapter 1, verse 26 is huge because there are six places in the entire biblical canon that address homosexuality. But Romans chapter 1, verse 26 is the only place in the entire Bible that addresses lesbian behavior, women and women. Now, Manny, why is this so important? Well, that's important because there are a lot of scholars and a lot of people with a gay-affirming argument or stance when it comes to scripture that will say that you cannot compare homosexuality today with homosexuality in the Greco-Roman world, that these are totally different contexts. And there is some validity there. Here is the validity. What they're going to say is that in the Greco-Roman world, so much of homosexual practice is exploitative, that it comes in the form in two forms, either prostitution, which is exploitative, or pederasty, which is an older man with a younger boy, which is exploitative, okay, which is pedophilia. So prostitution and pedophilia, or pederasty, are all exploitative forms of homosexual practice. And really, like, there's no connection between this exploitative act and a loving, monogamous homosexual relationship. And that argument has some validity. But Romans chapter 1, verse 26 kind of blows that argument out of the water, because lesbian relationships are not exploitative. Okay? Lesbian relationships fall outside of the bounds of prostitution or pederasty or pedophilia. Lesbian relationships in the Greco-Roman world were love-based, monogamous-based, non-exploitative relationships. And Paul still says that this is the pinnacle of depravity, that what happens when you make man the measure of all things, which is what Roman or Greco-Roman paganism is built on, is that man turns inward and creates an idol of himself, that even that which is opposite him, he or she is no longer attracted to. And God gives us over to this kind of depravity. And so Paul proves through Romans chapter 1, verse 18 to Romans chapter 1, verse 32, that the Roman pagan, the Greco-Roman pagan, is guilty before God. Then we kind of switch, okay? And now from Romans chapter 2, verse 1 to Romans chapter 2, verse 16, Paul outlines how the Gentile, not the Gentile pagan, but the Gentile moralist, the good person, the I don't know why I need to surrender my life to Jesus because I'm a good person, how that person is also guilty before a righteous God. He's going to say this in Romans chapter 2, verse 3. So when you, a mere human, pass judgment on them meaning pagans, and yet do the same things, do you think you will escape God's judgment? And then in Romans chapter 2, verse 17, all the way to chapter 2, verse 29, Paul outlines how the Jews are guilty before God because they've broken the Torah. Bible nerds, I have an announcement. My brand new book, Crushing Chaos, releases May of 2025, and pre-orders are officially open. When I began to learn Genesis in its proper context, I learned that the creation account is not primarily about God creating something out of nothing, but rather God bringing divine order to the chaos of the cosmos. That one nugget was a game changer for me, because I've been preaching to all the kids in my youth group that peace was a solution for their anxiety. But really, God's solution to chaos is never peace, but rather order. Peace isn't something that you stumble into, it's something that you intentionally step into. And that starts with aligning your life with God's order. I think that this book is a game changer. It's nerdy, it's practical, it provides a very contextual understanding of the book of Genesis, and if you grab a copy, you'll learn why there's a huge dragon on the cover. Head to the link in the show notes to pre-order, or head to crushingchaos.com to see the really dope trailer that we made for this book. I think it's time for you to crush the chaos in your life, and that starts with grabbing a copy of this book. Now, back to the podcast. So you can imagine each group, as Paul is addressing one group, the other two groups going, yeah, get them, Paul, get them. Amen. Yep, they're wrong. And then Paul turns his attention to that group. And you can imagine how the other groups are like, yeah, get them, Paul. And meanwhile, the Jews are standing on the sidelines like, yeah, you tell those Gentiles. You tell the Gentile pagans. Yeah, you tell the Gentile moralists or the Gentile believers. And then finally, Paul points to the Jews. And he says, actually, you are more guilty than any other group, because you've had the truth, you've had the Torah, you've had the very words of God, and you still haven't fully accepted. Not only is the pagan guilty, not only is the Gentile believer or moralist guilty, not only is the Jew guilty, but every single person is guilty. So, I gave you guys a lot of context, gave you guys some nerdy nuggets. Here's the timeless truth for the day. We all stand guilty before God, and we're all in dire need of his grace and compassion. Chapter 2 kind of leaves us on this cliffhanger where Paul has not spoken about the grace of God yet. But guess what? That's coming in chapter 3. Our timeless truth for the day, our big takeaway, is to compare our morality or righteousness to others will always lead to pride in and of ourselves. The only one we should compare ourselves to is a holy God. God says, of course, if you compare yourself to the pagan, of course, if you compare yourself to the moralist, you look amazing. But when we put you on the backdrop of my holiness, we realize that you are just as sinful as everybody else. Romans chapter 1 and 2 are designed to create a level playing field. We all have sinned and we've all fallen short of God's glory. But I'm getting ahead of myself. That is a verse from tomorrow's reading. But you can naturally see how that's where Paul is leading. Hey, I hope our context clues were helpful for today. Hope our nerdy nugget was helpful for today. And I hope our timeless truth was helpful as you read Romans chapter 1 and 2. Tomorrow, we got Romans chapter 3 and 4, and I'll see you right here. So proud of you. Love you guys. Peace. Thanks so much for joining us on the Bible Department podcast. You can find us online and learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and on Instagram at the Bible Department. If you enjoyed this episode and want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow.